Chiland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining me for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So I said joining me because today Alex is unfortunately not feeling too well, but he'll be back for our episodes very soon. So today we're going to do a usual show after a Calcio weekend. We are going to name our winners and losers from what we saw during the Serie A action. We definitely wanted to cover Milan. They've been doing so well this season. So I invited my friend Vince from Milan Weekly Pod. We did a quick hit on Milan, which I think you will really enjoy. And then the headline guest today is our friend Alex Frasio from Gazzetta dello Sport. We did an overview of the league so far and got a testimonial on Maradona for him. At the end of the movie, I'll also do, at the end of the podcast, I should say, we'll also have a movie review. I finally got to see Fincher's new movie, Mank. But before we get to winners and losers, wanted to talk to you about two subjects. Had Alex been here today, I would have asked him what was more controversial, but maybe more importantly, more unnecessary between Conte bringing in Eriksen in stoppage time in a match that was already decided, which felt like a big slap in the face of the Danish midfielder, or Mino Raiola's recent quotes to Tutto Sport about Pogba's future. So I would have loved to hear Alex's perspective, and we'll get it when he's on later this week. But a couple of thoughts on this. Conte is really his own person. Definitely is beat of his own drummer, if you will. Conte does what Conte wants to do. This could have been a fantastic week for Inter, and I still think it is. After the win against the Sassuolo, the win in the Champions League, they win another Serie A match. Even Hakimi has a superb game against Bologna. So you think, wow, everything looks so different about Inter. But of course, Conte had to do what Conte does and do something controversial. And in a lot of ways, a lot of people took it as embarrassing Eriksen and showing him who's boss by bringing him in at the end of the match. So Conte squandered the opportunity for complete serenity and peace at Inter, but we know at that club there is always the little bit of the pazza element. Now on to Mino Raiola's quotes to Tutto Sport, and I think it's very significant that the quotes were made to Tutto Sport. For those of you that aren't familiar with them, they are an Italian newspaper website that's based in Turin, same city as Juve. They are definitely a very pro-Juve paper, you know, much more so than, say, Gazzetta dello Sport for the clubs in Milano. I definitely think Tutto Sport leans much more in favor of Juve. So I thought it was very significant that Mino Raiola made those quotes there. As James Horncastle pointed out, and I do think this is important, that interview was already planned because Tutto Sport does the award for the young players in Europe. And obviously, Mino had players like Haaland involved. But I don't think it's a coincidence that he made these forceful statements saying that it was over for Pogba at Man United and that Juve was a possibility with a paper based in Turin. I think there's a couple of reasons for this. I'm sure Juve does not mind that now Pogba is a big storyline for their fans, for one. It hasn't been a great period for Juve. I think the win against Torino didn't feel like a great moment for the team. No one really feels like Pirlo has really the team running on all cylinders. So I think even for Juve, this is a great storyline to be out there. Obviously, very upsetting for Man United fans. I can understand why, but there's always two sides to every story. Now, can Juve afford Pogba? Without a swap deal or without selling someone like Dybala, in my mind, it's near to impossible that Juve can afford Pogba. It's not just the transfer fee, it's also the humongous wages. So Juve would likely have to shed a big, big contract just to be able to add Pogba to their payroll. So if Man United was interested in a deal for Dybala, maybe that's possible. A deal for Rabiot, Ramsey, other players, a combination of players. Who knows? It would have to be something along those lines. The other thing is Juve could sell Dybala to a third team and use the money they raised there to get Pogba. It would be basically almost a pure plusvalenza for Juve. They've amortized Dybala's fairly significant transfer fee from a while ago. But then you have to wonder, you know, how big is the market for Dybala and how big, you know, how big of a return are you going to get for him? So interesting. I definitely think Juve definitely a factor. And Pogba, I think, had COVID not happened, there's a decent chance Juve would have taken much more concrete steps to sign him last summer and maybe had a chance to sign his contract. Now, I know Real Madrid is also a team that has been, you know, linked to Pogba. Would it surprise me that he goes to Spain next? Absolutely not. But in general, both Real Madrid and Barcelona, especially Real Madrid, I don't think they really have a long history of working with Raiola. So there's only so many teams that work with him and can afford him. So let's see what happens. Definitely a fascinating story that I'm sure we'll be covering a lot in January. But let's talk a little bit more calcio. Let's get into the winners and losers of the weekend. Let's start off with Lazio's win against Spezia. Big shout out to my boy Milinkovic-Savic, man of the match. Immobile had another goal. Look, Lazio, maybe we are underrating them in Serie A. Also, a nice shout out to Peperina, had an excellent game once again. I think he's been a valuable addition for Lazio beyond the leadership that he brings. On Spezia, I want to give a shout out to Nzola, who's now scored 4 of their last 5 goals. Then let's get to the Derby della Mole between Juve and Torino. I thought Belotti was the man of the match, was superb. Set up Zaza for really what could have been the KO goal, but that didn't go through. So Belotti, I thought, was man of the match. Really, really great performance. On Juve side, we had Bonucci, Cuadrado. I've said it over and over again. How many times has Cuadrado bailed out Juve on games like this? It feels constant. And then McKinney, who scored off the bench. And to be honest, I think McKinney has shown more intensity than pretty much all his other teammates recently. Then we had Inter's win against Bologna. As we mentioned at the top, Hakimi was man of the match. Also, excellent performance by Brozovic. If you remember, not long ago, we used to say on Calcioland, as Brozo goes, so does Inter. So really nice game there for him. Big win for Inter against Bologna. Then we had Napoli winning at Crotone. Insigne has been really excellent this season. I keep thinking about our friend Napoli Outsider saying that other than Barella, Insigne is the best Italian player of the year, and I completely agree. He's been sensational, especially since Maradona's passing. Also enjoyed Gattuso's quote after the match that he said that he wouldn't start on this current Napoli, that the team is that good. Now, granted, there was more to it. He said that the game has evolved. The game is much more technical, and he didn't have the technical ability required to be in his midfield this season. So interesting quote from Gattuso. Always enjoy his honesty. Then we had the draw between Roma and Sassuolo. I called this the Juve regret draw. I thought Locatelli and Spinazzola were two players that stood out. Of course, Juve owned Spinazzola, and they were kicking the tires around Locatelli. I've said it many times. I think they'll regret not signing him. Then we had the draw between Cagliari and Verona. I'm sure Verona would have liked to win, but they got another strong performance from Zaccagni, who was recognized by the Italian Player Association as the best player in the league for the month of November. He continues that trend by scoring. And also for Cagliari, their jewel addition from the summer, Marin, who arrived from the Dutch league, he had a goal. So let's keep an eye on Marin, intriguing player there. And then we had Milan's big win against Sampdoria. A couple of standouts. I thought Gabbia, who replaced Chiar, was a really probably the man of the match there. Kessie, another really strong performance. Calabria played well once again, and Castillejo with a goal off the bench. Fantastic for Milan that they can keep winning without Zlatan. Also want to give a huge shout out to Ranieri. Usually, as always, super classy guy. After the game, he said that, you know, he would have been upset had he gotten the penalty that wasn't given to Sampdoria, had he been on Milan. Just really classy guy. As always, he could have very easily had found an alibi for that match and decided not to. Let's get to the losers. I'm going to put as a loser how it looked on TV, that vintage Sampdoria jersey. It gave me flashbacks to that horrendous Juve kit from last season. But I have to say, up close, that kit was really, really nice. Just did not look good on TV. On Juve in the derby, you know, two of my favorite players really stunk up the joint. Both Dybala and Kulusevski were bad in that game. This was a great opportunity for Dybala. The derby could have been an emotional turnaround for him. That doesn't happen. Kulusevski has not played well recently. You know, I love him. I'll be the first to praise him, but not afraid to criticize him past few games. I don't know if he got a little arrogant after his great start at Juve, but does not look like himself. Then I think Bologna wingback Hickey is going to have nightmares of Hakimi just running over his flank. And two more disappointing home draws for two teams that we've talked a lot about on the podcast, and they've often been on this segment, unfortunately. Parma, who draw at home against Benevento with barely any shots on goal, and Fiorentina with a last-second draw against Genoa with a goal by Milenkovic. Definitely games those teams absolutely needed to win. For Parma, I will say this. There's buzz that D'Aversa is going to go to Monza. Obviously, they just signed Balotelli. D'Aversa was the former Parma manager. If he goes there and they can rehire him to help him avoid relegation, I even texted this to Napoli Outsider. I think it's almost a lock that Parma's going down to Serie B. So things are escalating there. Same with Fiorentina. You know, the thing that stands out about for me about Fiorentina is, look, Comiso's invested a ton. I respect him for that. He's held himself accountable. But if you make all those investments and you still don't have a coach and a reliable striker, it almost feels like it's for nothing. Like, you have all these great pieces, but they can't finalize. You have Castrovilli, Ribery, you add Bonaventura, you have Pulgar, you have some talent, Callejon, you have some talent on the team. But if you don't have a striker that can finalize all that, it's almost for nothing. And then Prandelli, we talked about it. It was a very uninspired hiring, in my opinion. And I do think we'll see Iacchini back probably sooner rather than later. So those are our winners and losers. Now let's get to our friend Vince to celebrate Milan's great streak. Okay, so we had to do a quick hit on Milan today after the impressive win against Sampdoria. They are still 5 points up in the standings. If you're a Milan fan, you really couldn't be happier with how this season started. So recently with Milan, we've been going pretty often directly to Milano, but I wanted to switch things up today. We love our friends over in Canada on Milan Weekly Pod. They are the English voice of Radio Rossonera, a station we have strong feelings for here on Calcioland. We love them, based in Italy. And we've had in the past quite a few times on the show Steve, but I figure today we switch it up and invite the other host from the superb Milan Weekly Podcast, Vince. So without further ado, my friend, always a pleasure to chat with you. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Thank you so very much for having me on. I love it. There's Steve, and then there's the other guy. But I know I'm not as entertaining as Steve, but I find that we have a great dynamic, and thank you for reaching out. Sometimes, it's nice to mix these things up once in a while, right? But thank you again for reaching out to Dave.
Well, you are equal to me as Steve. But, Steve, as you can say, can be pretty colorful. But I will say some Milan fans sometimes say that maybe he's a little bit too negative. So I figured we'd switch it up with the team doing so well. So there's some individual players I want to talk to you about, Vince. I have some questions on, but let's keep it very simple. I've been asking this to every Milan guest I've had on recently. Do you believe Milan can win the Scudetto? Or if I gave you the option right now, you can sign for it on behalf of the whole club, for all the whole fan base, for a fourth place finish and back to the Champions League. Or especially after the Sampdoria game, you're thinking they can do better. So do you think Milan can win the Scudetto?
You know, it's a hard question because if you've listened in, I'm the mush. I'm like that guy Mush in A Bronx Tale. I don't like to predict stuff because I'm always that's why I don't gamble anymore. But I know our friend even David Fante from Milan Club Philly saying, jump on the bus. He's believing this year. Look, to that question, would I take – you know, top four spot in the Champions League instead of battling, I think I would go with that, because nobody's going to sit here and tell you that, oh yeah, at the beginning of the season, oh, we're going to go win the Scudetto. I think the goal was to finish in those top four and get into a Champions League spot and, you know, move forward from over there. And you know how City A can be, David. You know, what is it, a couple of years ago, what is it, Inter that won their first 8-9 games in a row, and all of a sudden, you know, like maybe a couple of months after, they're trailing. So it's a long battle. And that's why I don't like to talk about, you know, predictions or anything like that. But to your question, and maybe some people would battle for the Scudetto, but I would definitely take that assured fourth spot to make Champions League soccer. But that's my opinion. And again, reasons why I don't bet anymore.
Okay, awesome. Well, I appreciate your sentiment that you don't want to jinx them. So well played there, my friend. Okay, Vince, let's move on to some individual players. And I have to start with this one, because I have to say, when Kjaer got hurt, there was rightfully a lot of concerns. He's been superb, I think, performance-wise. He's been the best center back in Serie A. He's been a rock for Milan, played pretty much every game. And he misses the match against Sampdoria. And I have to say, I thought Gabbia was superb, one of the best players on the pitch. Did you expect them to be able to put in such a strong performance?
No, to be honest, I was pleasantly surprised, because, you know, we didn't have the best of outings, and not that Sampdoria was so much better, but I'm glad to see him grow into that position. But, you know, if we look at Gabbia and all his last outings, it's not like he's been stellar. So it looks like, you know, he needs those minutes. He needs those playing minutes, because, you know, we're not going to put Musacchio or Durante, as he would like to call him, Duarte. So at this point here, you know, it's like I like to see him grow minutes, but I don't know if he was going to have this kind of performance maybe against a top tier team. But again, if we don't make him play, we'll never know. So far, so good. But, you know, we're going to touch base on one of your other questions there. But Gabbia still has a lot to prove to be one of those, you know, to replace Kajar, like Steve would like to say. But so far, so good. It's much better than what we saw at the beginning of the season, that's for sure.
For sure. Yeah, I agree. Okay, so let's talk more in general. I thought Gabby had a standout game there. But for the whole season, and look, a lot of these improvements dated back to the end of last season in that crazy post-pandemic calcio. But there are really three players that stand out to me as massively improved on Milan. We've talked a lot about Kessié and Calhanoglu. They definitely belong. I also think Calabria has been really rather good this season. So out of these three, who surprised you the most with their improvements?
I would definitely say Calabria, David, because, you know, Steve and I have always been Team Frank. He's performing on some different levels right now, but always believed him and always had that talent. And you're asking me who has been more surprising. Calhanoglu has taken a dip, you know, for the last couple of outings. Calabria, for me, I never expected him to be such a, you know, he's doing his job. He's playing, to me, like, you know, above average. And maybe people had forgotten about him last season. And the second half, he didn't have that great of a second half. But all of a sudden, he's like, he's playing, he's running up and down, he's covering, he's defending well. And a lot of the times, he seems to be the unsung hero in all these games where people don't talk about him, but he's there. And I don't think anybody at the beginning of the season would have told you, oh yeah, Calabria is going to turn around and is going to give us these super performances. Look at, you know, he's taken up that, maybe last year we were talking about, you know, him maybe getting sold, or, and those talks haven't come up in a very long time. So personally for me, it would definitely have to be Calabria.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely a great shout. I think he's really been one of the best right backs in all of Serie A. For sure. So let's talk about Milan surviving without Zlatan. I have to tell you, the thing that if you told me that Milan would struggle more, that Juve would struggle way more without Ronaldo than Milan would without Ibrahimovic, I certainly would have not believed that at the beginning of the season because of the quality of the squad, the experience of the squad. But that's really remarkable to me that Milan have won every game that Zlatan's been out. Now, granted, Zlatan and his great wisdom and power also kind of picked his spots, but again, Juve has struggled against a lot of the same types of teams without Ronaldo. So are you surprised by how well Milan's done without Zlatan?
Well, I don't know if you knew, David. This is a campionato falsato. There's a conspiracy against Juventus to give us all these penalties so we can
only
win
this
these games,
year?
According to the...
Only this year?
Yeah, only this year. No, this year everything is coming to Milan's side, but okay. Am I surprised? I'm definitely surprised. I'm definitely surprised because, you know, it would be the easy way out to say, oh my God, without Zlatan, what are we going to do? But I believe this winning mentality, you know, what have we lost? Like, you know, one game in the last, you know, how many months? And I think it's the mentality of this team that it's, yes, we can. You know, looking down at the game against Celtic, 2-0 down, and everybody's like, you know, freaking out. And it's like, no, look at this fighting spirit from this team. When you have guys like Castillejo scoring, how many different goal scorers have we had? And I think this winning mentality is helping the team score from any different directions. Surprised, definitely. I didn't think we were going to win this much without Zlatan, but to all the people that say we're Ibra dependent, I think we've shown that we're capable of doing it. I believe talent has a lot to do with it. Don't get me wrong. But when you're in that state of mind that you can accomplish anything, this is the fruit of what we're seeing right now. Milan's going with, you know, Joe Schmo and anybody off that bench. It's just, you know, when everything's clicking, it's clicking.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I have to tell you, that's why I appreciate you not wanting to jinx them. I think Milan fans now definitely can dream a little bit more. So I know there's a lot of attention. The January transfer window will be here in a few weeks. I can't believe it, but it will be here. I know Milan fans obviously are excited because the team's doing well and they are looking for ways to bolster the squad. But I'm going to make it very simple. If you could improve just one position, which one would it be and why?
You know, my first instinct would have to be a center back. But the more we look at it, and, you know, I think people might talk like as an alternative to Ibra. Look, we all wish that he can play until he's 50 years old. He is playing at so high levels, but we need to stay realistic and go, Ibra, hypothetically, what is he going to give us? Maybe an extra year? We need to have that game plan where, you know, guys like Colombo, yes, they're still young. So I'm debating between striker and center back, but I think I'm going to lean more towards center back because in the attacking, we always have that kind of, you know, option. Would it be Colombo? You could put Rebic up there. You could even put Leao up there. But as a center back, and you know, going in these three competitions a year, you need that solid foundation. And right now, you know, with the center backs that we have, you need to go get, you know, Milinkovic always comes up in the conversation. You need to go get somebody that's just the way we picked up Romagnoli at that time. Nice and young from Roma, you know, capable of giving you much more years and capable of growing. So I'm definitely going to have to lead towards center back because the defense, you know, look at all the strengths of Milan in the past and the glory years always started from that defense, those back four. So definitely I would have to side with a center back.
Okay. Yeah, I think that is the right choice for sure. So let's close on this. As I mentioned at the top, Vince, we love having you guys on. I love the show, Milan Weekly Podcast. Really a lot of great stuff going there. As I mentioned, you are the English voice of Radio Rossonera, who do a superb job in Italy and who now are also on the Milan app. So really, really great stuff. I know you guys do YouTube Live, you're getting on Mondays, you're getting ready to do this later today. So let's do two things. First, tell us a little bit about your pod, and B, I know you guys have a superb initiative for Christmas, which you do every year, which is terrific, and I want to make sure we plug that as well.
Thank you for that. So yeah, Milan Weekly Podcast, guys, every Monday night, live on YouTube, 9 p.m., where, you know, we do multiple shows, but the main show is there. We've been doing this for so many years. We started off as Red Card Weekly, now Milan Weekly Podcast. We're basically two guys talking Milan and Calcio and Serie A, just like if you were two guys talking at the bar, at the local pub, and just, you know, shooting the breeze from there. We're not professionals, nor do we pretend to be. That's our motto, you know, and we like to, Steve likes to create controversies once in a while, but you're not going to get any BS from us. always shooting it straight. We argue sometimes, we agree on sometimes, but always entertaining. And we just like to think that we provide something different to anybody out there giving out content on Serie A. So thanks for letting me mention that. So yeah, every Monday night and all throughout all your platforms, podcasting platforms, we do a different, you know, Milanismo worldwide, where we reach out to every Milan clubs around the world. Sometimes we'll do a Patreon special with the fans, you know, the patrons that may be talking. And always on the YouTube channel. So if you go to Milan Weekly Pod, just subscribe and you'll be able to know when we go on.
Excellent. So let's talk a little bit about, let's talk a little bit about the toy and food drive. Really awesome stuff. I know you guys have been doing it for a while. So tell our listeners a little bit about this and how they can get involved.
Yeah, so I started personally 12 years ago helping a friend of mine that we're doing a toy and food drive in Montreal here. We're a local bar where people would just come drop off, you know, toys and foods and for the people they need this holiday season. And Steve and I, we got more involved with the Milan Weekly Pod, with Milan Club Montreal maybe 3 years ago. I think in the last two times we collected over maybe $3,500, would it be from GoFundMe or from people here around here. Very humbling experience. And, you know, this year we weren't sure, what are we doing, you know, with this whole COVID. I don't have to explain that to anybody or any of your listeners, but we've decided, you know, last minute we're going to do it. It's just going to be a drop-off kind of thing. So I know that we're doing it this Sunday. If you guys take a look at our Facebook or Twitter pages, you'll have the link to the GoFundMe if you'd like to contribute a donation. And, you know, my sister is actually district manager for Walmart, getting us into a Walmart that, you know, past closing time so we can go out and buy. Last time we had, 18 carts full of non-perishable goods. And just, you know, just giving back. And, you know, that one time, we should be doing it more than once in a year, but this is something we've associated ourselves to. And we like to give back as much as possible. So yeah, Steve and I will be there live Sunday in the freezing cold, in the trucks, getting everybody's foods as they drop them off and bringing it to the people that need it much more than you and I.
Well, listen, it's really superb that you've been doing this, Vince, for this long. Really, really great stuff. I love what you guys are using the platform of the podcast to advertise it. So definitely, we have listeners in North America. Definitely check that out. And obviously, check out the fantastic Milan Weekly Pod. It's a lot of fun, good time. But they also cover the team really, really well. So I'm very glad we did this, Vince. I can't thank you enough for coming on to the show today. Thank you so much. If I don't speak to you, Buon Natale. And I look forward to chatting with you guys again in the new year.
Same to you, David. Buon Natale, and watch out for those conspiracies online there. We gotta double check all this information. You gotta love Twitter, baby. You gotta love Twitter.
Okay. I'm very excited to welcome our next guest. If you've been listening to our pod for a while, needs no introduction. Alex Prozio from Gazzetta dello Sport, one of my favorite journalists in Italy. And I always say one of my favorite things of having this podcast is bringing someone of Alex caliber that people in Italy get to read all the time to an English speaking audience. So Alex, always a pleasure to chat with you, my friend. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Ciao, David. Thank you. Hi, everybody. It's always a pleasure for me as well.
So my friend, before we started recording, I was telling you how impressed I was with the coverage of the paper you work at, Gazzetta dello Sport, on Maradona. I really thought you nailed the cover on the day that he passed away. It was perfect. I thought the coverage after was sensational. I think you and I are kind of around the same age. So I want to leave it really open and just say and ask you, how will you remember Maradona?
I will remember him. I want to remember him with one of his last images as a footballer. I remember his shout at the USA 94. His shout to the camera after a goal against Greece. I think that's my favorite image of Maradona because it was it's a kind of that's what we lost. We could have lost what we didn't remember because he didn't play for a long time before playing the World Cup that year. It was it was showing this is what I can do, you know? And then, then he was stopped. I think that if he wasn't stopped, Argentina would have won that World Cup. That it would have been the World Cup of Maradona, not of Roberto Baggio, of Romario. That's my image. I have to say that as many Italians, we are not afraid to say that in a way we hated Maradona when he was here. Because he played for Napoli, so he wasn't played for Juventus, for Inter, or for Milan. So Napoli was a contender for the Scudetto, won two Scudettos. And in a way, who was not a Napoli fan, in a way, hated Maradona because he could do anything. So when you played, when your team played against Maradona, he was an enemy. It was an enemy that could do anything. I think that is what happened when you fear someone on the pitch, you hate him because you fear him, and that's I think that's what happened. It happened in the World Cup in 1990, you know, because when he played against Italy, he was booed in Napoli. So I want to remember him, as I said, with that shout. That we'll always remember as what Maradona could do on a football pitch, and what we lost for many years, because I'm afraid we lost many years of Maradona because of everything that happened outside the pitch.
For sure. No, I love that answer. That was a great shout picking that image. I don't think many people have raised that. I love it, and I think you said it perfectly. You know, as an opponent, few players ever struck as much fear in your heart as Maradona. So well said. So before we move on to the current Serie A, I just want to ask you this. You know, I was pretty young when Maradona was playing for Napoli, but, you know, Serie A was really loaded back then. And I say this all the time. You had players like Zico at Udinese, Junior at Torino, Maradona at Napoli, not the classic teams. Obviously, you follow professionally the sport. Would you say that Serie A in the mid to late 80s was the strongest the Italian league has been in your lifetime?
No, in my opinion, the best was in the 90s. For example, AC Milan bought Jean-Pierre Papin, that was the Ballon d'Or in charge, and bench him.
Yeah,
in the 80s we had just one. There was a long period that you could have just one footballer from outside Italy. We had the best ones. We had 16 teams, 16 of the best footballers in the world.
Yeah,
I think we had the best ones. But then in the 90s we had, I don't know, four or five in each team.
Yeah, straniere, yeah,
in each
for sure.
Team. Yeah, in each team. If you think that Papin was on the bench, I think of AC Milan. We had, the defense, we don't have to talk about because they were Italian. You had Boban, you had Savicevic, you had Van Basten for a period, you had Desailly, you had Papin, Brian Laudrup. Just in one team.
Yeah.
That was unbelievable, in my opinion. Unbelievable.
Well said.
My father worked for Atalanta, and in his team, they had Caniggia, they had Evair, and they had Stromberg. It was Atalanta.
Yeah. Well said. That's a great point that in the 80s, they couldn't have that many foreign players. So great shout there. So let's get back to the current Serie A. So I have a feeling if I interviewed about 8 days ago, our conversation about Inter would be very different. I think Conte went back to his roots in many ways, as people do often when they are in a crisis. I think this is a more operaia Inter than we would have expected. So what do you make of this turnaround that started with a decisive win against Sassuolo a week from Saturday? What do you make of Inter's week so far?
I think that the 3-5-2, which is the system that Conte used mostly in the latest years, is the best one for this Inter. he tried to play with the trequartista. He tried with Eriksen last year. He tried with Vidal or Barella or Sanchez this year. But I think that in 3-5-2, it's a more balanced team. They are more solid in this way. I think it was the right choice, because if you can't do anything else and it works what you do with the 3-5-2, go back to the 3-5-2. Because I would have liked to see them playing in a different way. I still think that in some way they should play with a back four, for example.
Yeah.
But I think that Conte will never do that. So.
Yeah, I agree.
If we see the last two matches against Sassuolo and against Bologna on Saturday, and in Germany, they play 3-5-2. You can see them that they know where to move, they know what to do. That doesn't happen when they play with a trequartista.
Well said, well said. I also loved your tweet today on Conte's quotes on Hakimi, on Italian football being too tactical. Yeah. So what do you make of Hakimi at Inter? Because, you know, Darmian fit in, maybe Conte's way of doing things maybe a little bit more, but do you think Hakimi is not going to end up like Eriksen at Inter? Do you think at least because he fits a role in Conte's formation that makes more sense, he won't end up like Eriksen?
Well, I hope that that Hakimi will be a main character in this Inter. I don't see why he shouldn't be. He's a great player, but he needs to play in his position, and his position is playing on the wing. He has to run. He needs to run. He needs to have meters in front of him. I watched some matches for my work on Gazzetta, and against Torino, for example, he played as an attacker. He had to play with his shoulders to the
goal. Yeah,
to the goal. Yeah, he can't play that like that. He has to run. That's why, in my opinion, they can play with the back four, with Hakimi on the right, because he needs to run. I don't know if someone prefers Darmian. Okay, make him play. But in my opinion, there is no arguing about that. Hakimi is so much better. We saw him in Dortmund. We saw him every time he plays. If he plays in his position, he's such a better player than Darmian, in my opinion.
Absolutely. No, well, I think that's certainly fair. So let's talk briefly about Juve. You kind of had a similar comment yesterday on a lot of their players, attacking players, playing with their back to the goal. So it's been a little bit uneven with Juve. I'm assuming Inter convinces you more than Juve between the two. And what do you make of them recently, the Bianconeri?
Yeah, I'm much more convinced of Inter and not for Juve. I think that Pirlo needs a lot of time, because I still can't see what they want to do with the ball. So instead, I think that the teams, first of all, if we compare the two rosters, I think that they're on the same level. Maybe Inter is a little better, but Juventus has Ronaldo. That's the difference.
Yeah.
That doesn't make the difference between the two. I think Inter is. I think that they. It's a mental thing that they need to understand. They need to be convinced that they're so strong. And I'm talking about Inter, because when they do, they are. They have a strong defense. They have a strong midfield. I think they have a strong midfield. They have a very strong attack. I think that they're better. They have more sure things in how can I say? And Juventus doesn't. Juventus is still searching for herself.
I agree. Yeah, I definitely think Conte, what we saw the past week from Inter, this is a team that knows who they are, and I don't think Juve yet knows who they are besides relying on their big-name players, for sure. So we're recording this before Milan's game today, but I have to say, look, they've been definitely the most consistent team in Serie A. They've managed so far to do pretty well without Ibra. Now Chiara being out is going to be a big, big blow for them. And I know we're recording this before the game, but as of now, do you consider Milan a team that will be able to contend for the Scudetto until the end? Or do you think they should, if they could sign for fourth place today and just get back to the Champions League, they should take that?
It's a very strange year. It's a very strange season. That's why I say that, yes, in my opinion, Milan can compete for Scudetto until the end. Because it's... You never know what happens every match, you know? Everything can happen. Everything can happen. And they have this attacking style that I like so much. They always run for the goal. They play with enthusiasm. The impression is that they have fun playing football, and that is always important. They survived the without Ibrahimovic. Now we see if they survive without Kia, I think they can do it. So they have a very complete team because they have many players in the attack. They have choices in midfield. You don't have Benasser, can play Tonali. They don't have Kessi, can play Kunic. They have many players. I think, yes, they can. Also because I think that the Europa League is not such a hard... it's not so hard until February or March, so they can handle the two. They can compete.
One of my listeners pointed out that maybe this is a little bit like Zaccheroni's first year at Milan, where maybe they just surprise us and get it done. So let's see there. Speaking of surprises, I wanted to ask you about Verona. I know today they didn't beat Cagliari, but to me, I think they've been the surprise team in Serie A. I know they beat Atalanta, you have a strong affection to. I thought they played really well against Sassuolo. They probably deserved a better result than they got there. So, A, what do you make of Verona so far this season? Did they surprise you as well? And do you think Juric can be a manager for, you know, a big team, let's say a Lazio or Roma, or maybe even more than that in the near future?
Yes, Verona was amazing. Is amazing. I would have never imagined such a season for them because they lost Pessina, they lost Kumbula, they lost a lot of players that were so much important. Amrabat, so many players that were so important last year. They play exactly the same, maybe a little better, if I can say, because they found Kalinic that can play a very good football for them. Zaccagni, that probably now is in the five most important Italian players. I think that they were really amazing. Really amazing. It's all of the Jewish world, no doubt about that. Absolutely no doubt. But I don't know if he can succeed with a big team because he's like Gasperini. He needs players like soldiers that do exactly what he asks. He needs sacrifices, and I'm afraid that in big team you don't find many players that sacrifice for the team. We can see what happens for Inter as well. Not all the players can sacrifice. That's what Conte asks to his players.
Yeah.
So we saw Gasperini at Inter. His ideas were the same as now, but it didn't work because you need to ask your players so much. We saw also Sarri at Juventus, very dogmatic manager that asked so much to his players, and not all of them can accept that.
For sure. Well said there. And I know you have a strong affection for Piscina, and I had almost forgotten that is another key player that they lost, for sure. Well done there. So another team I wanted to ask you about is Lazio, who I have to say I didn't expect them to do quite as well in the Champions League as they did. So I want to ask you, A, are you surprised they did that well against Dortmund and then the Champions League in general? And do you think maybe we're underestimating them in Serie A? Because maybe they're not as sexy as Atalanta. They have a lot of the same players. You know, it's not maybe the most dynamic team. So, A, are you surprised in the Champions League? And do you think we're not giving them enough credit for being a factor in Serie A this season?
Very surprised. Very, very surprised. I didn't tweet it, but I was really surprised because if you get 4 points on six against Borussia Dortmund, I would have never said that, because I thought that their style wouldn't have worked in Europe.
Yeah.
And instead, it works. It works. I think that if you play so well against Borussia Dortmund, it was really surprising. Really, really surprising. I must admit, I would have never said. And are we underestimating them? Maybe we are. Maybe we are, because we still think that their last season was above the line, if I can say. But until you have Immobile that scores so much, until you have Milinkovic, which is such a good player, if you have Luis Alberto, maybe we underestimate them because of the defense. Because when you see Radu, Acerbi, Luis Felipe, I don't know, there's something that doesn't convince us so much.
I still think that
Inter and Juventus have something more. In this moment, I think that Milan has something more.
Oh, for sure.
Maybe
for
I'm wrong.
Sure. No, I agree with you. I think, you know, more like, you know, the Roma, the Napolis, the Atalanta of the world, maybe Sassuolo's in that mix. I feel like maybe we are not putting Lazio there as they should. But one manager
I am underestimating Napoli, for example.
I didn't
say anything about Napoli, but Napoli, guys, they have maybe the best roster in the league, maybe.
Yeah, no, I think Napoli's roster is closer to Juve and Inter than it is any other team. They are definitely the closest. Definitely have a lot of talent there. So one manager that has really, really intrigued me this season, and I want to get your thoughts on, is Italiano at Spezia. So a lot of people were telling me about him because he played for Padova and he left a great memory there. And people were telling me, oh, this guy is a really, really good manager. You'll like him. And then I looked at Spezia's squad and I barely knew anything, but I really like the way Spezia play. It's a little bit like a Liverani last season at Lecce. So what do you make at Italiano at Spezia, and do you think he's going to be a legit Serie A manager for years to come?
Yeah, sure. Let me say that Italiano as a player was kind of Pirlo style. That kind of player. I like his Spezia too. I like the idea that you can play football even if you are trying to avoid relegation. I think that it's a strong message that started maybe from Di Francesco, then De Zerbi, Juric, Liverani last year, that was not so lucky. But I like this idea that you can play football, a good football, an attacking football, even if you're trying to not be relegated. I like him. I think that they're a little more structured in defense, thinking about last year's Lecce, as you said, the Liverani team last year. They are a little bit more careful when they play defensively. But I think that Italiano can be a good manager in Serie A. Yes, I would like to have. I'd like to have more managers like him.
For sure. I totally agree. Okay, so Alex, it's always wonderful to speak to you. Thank you so much for coming on. Let's close on this. You know, you follow the Italy under 21 very closely. You know the players well. That's why I fought with Piscina. I know you were very happy to see him on the senior squad. So what can you tell us about the new batch of the under 21? And are there some players who you think maybe should be getting more attention than they are?
There are for sure. Many of them already went to the national team. Now, I think the next will be Scamacca, which is playing so good in Serie A. He's finally playing in Serie A because he's playing in Serie A. I like Raspadori, even if he's struggling a little bit playing with all in Serie A. And I really like Rovella. Rovella is just entering in the under-21 team, but he's such a good player, an excellent regista. I like him. And last name I do is Zappa.
Zappa, good shout.
Plays in a position that is poor in Italy. He plays on the right in defense. I think he's the man that under-21 was looking for.
Yeah, great shout. Yeah, Zappa's at Cagliari, should be pretty excited. I know at Pescara he was excellent. So, Alex, I can't thank you enough. It's always great to get your knowledge. Definitely, I like tweeting your articles from Gazzetta. They're great. You guys that read Italian, definitely check out all of Alex's work. It's always great. So thank you so much, my friend, for spending some of your Sunday with me talking calcio. And I look forward to doing it again soon.
You're welcome.
Okay, let's close the podcast with a movie review. You guys know I love pop culture. And by the way, this is just an appetizer. Later this week, we will have our dear friend Andrew Barker on. I want to talk a little bit more about this new movie by Fincher, Mank, talk about the future, maybe lack thereof, future for movie theaters. So that should be a lot of fun. But let me give you a couple of thoughts on Fincher's new movie, Mank. I have to say, this was my favorite weekend of a quarantine. I was lucky enough to score a PS5, and Fincher releases a new movie. This was one time where quarantine and restrictions were not a problem for me. So surprise, surprise, I absolutely loved Mank. Fincher is definitely one of my favorite directors. I like him way more than Nolan. This is a movie right up my alley. In a lot of ways, I feel like this is Fincher's version of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It is a movie about making a movie, so it's a typical Oscar bait. And I think this is the movie of Fincher that is the least Fincher-esque movie that I've seen. Because, A, it is a pretty brazen attempt to win an Oscar. We know the Hollywood loves movies about Hollywood, and this is a love story in a lot of ways to the Hollywood of the 1930s. It is about the writing of Citizen Kane, which is considered to be the greatest film of all time. Look, you know, I definitely think it helps if you know a decent amount about Citizen Kane to enjoy this movie, just like I felt like if you knew a lot about Charles Manson and Sharon Tate, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was much more interesting. Now, I am not a huge expert on Citizen Kane. I have a feeling about a third of this movie, Mank, went completely over my head with the references that have to do with Citizen Kane. But beyond that, I really, really enjoyed it. Gary Oldman, I think, is superb in this movie. I feel like this is a performance where he's telling me, hey, wait a second, if Daniel Day-Lewis is truly retired, I should be in the conversation for best actor in the game. I think he is superb in this. He's really funny, edgy at times. So really enjoyed that performance. I would surprise me if he wins another Oscar for this. So I thought the Amanda Seyfried absolutely stole the movie, was great in so many scenes in this. But really what stands out to me is the script of the film. And this script was actually written by Fincher's dad a long time ago, Jack Fincher. He died in 2003, had written the script a while ago, and it really pops. It's really funny. As I mentioned, this does not feel like a Fincher movie to me because it's such a crowd pleaser. Again, I think even someone who knows nothing about Citizen Kane could watch this movie and enjoy it. I think there are definitely some references to fake news, elections, things for this year. You can definitely look at it in that lens as well, or you can just look at it as, you know, what Hollywood was like at the time. Not surprisingly, I love the soundtrack from Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross from Nine Inch Nails. I love all their work that they've done with Fincher movies. They, of course, did The Social Network and Gone Girl. I think this soundtrack will likely win an Oscar. It's very different. It's all music from like the 30s. Executed perfectly. So I really enjoyed Mank. It's available on Netflix. Very much looking forward to Andrew Barker coming on and telling me that it's a meh movie, but I think you'll really enjoy Andrew's segment next episode. I have some cool stuff planned. So I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. All the best to Alex. He'll be back the next one, and thanks for tuning in today.